Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Welcome to the Capital Club Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Adams. Every week, we bring on some of the brightest leaders around the world to discuss issues facing high net worth individuals and family offices today. Hello, and welcome to the Capital Club Podcast. Today, I have with me Thomasina Williams. Thomasina helps families develop leaders to sustain both their financial wealth and their individual and collective well-being across generations. She was the first family dynamics consultant Wells Fargo Private Bank hired to come in-house to help its ultra-high net worth clients manage generational wealth transitions and train its wealth advisors to better understand family systems and support their ultra-high net worth clients. Thomasina, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Brian, for having me. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Yeah, and it's very, I don't know when this will actually go live, but we're recording on International Women's Day. So very apt that we have a female guest. So I'm glad that that was not certainly intentional, but I'm glad that it landed that way.
Things tend to work out.
They do. This is what my wife tells me. So this is about, I think, a different slant, but this bigger conversation on risk that families are having right now. When people ask me what conversations happening behind closed doors that people aren't speaking publicly about necessarily, I think it's really about having this broader view of what risk is. And it could be cyber, it could be legal, it could be regulatory compliance, transition. And a lot of what you think about is this maybe non-traditional risk factors that families are going through. Would love to have you expand upon that as a way to kind of start the conversation.
Yeah, it's interesting that when we think about risk, for the most part, it is focused on the assets, things like cybersecurity and getting hacked, getting someone getting into your database at your office, perhaps, or stealing someone's identity. We think about risk in terms of diversifying risk when we're making investments and making financial investments. What we rarely think about is the family itself. It is so interesting. I think that our society, we're all so focused on the financial assets that we've lost sight of the fact that it's a two-part equation, family wealth, generational wealth. We focus on the wealth part and the financial assets, and we're not as intentional in investing in our families who are the owners and the beneficiaries of those assets and whom we need to depend on to continue generation after generation after generation, making sure that those assets there are there and available. So it's really thinking about the human side of the equation. I refer to it as the family side of family wealth, the family side of family enterprise, I think is really we underappreciate the nature of the risk and the investment required to mitigate that risk and to lead to the fulfillment of individual family members, the family as a whole, and the preservation of the assets.
Let's go to the investment required part of it, because what I've said on the show ad nauseum is if you were to look at a family's capital allocation or resource allocation, there's likely going to be plenty of resources put towards the investment side or the trust and estate side or, you know, traditional property and casualty insurance, et cetera. But when you take a broader look at what the highest risk profiles within these families are beyond just these technical components, it is, like you said, very often it's going to be kind of a value-oriented qualitative issue where mom is no longer on a speaking terms with daughter.
Yes.
Or son has a substance abuse issue, or there's a health and wellness problem within the family itself, which is a much bigger risk factor than making sure that XYZ, you know, tax strategy is implemented correctly, right? And many families don't think about it that way. So how do you do the assessment on the front end to really understand what resources and investment spend is being put towards these family risk factors that you mentioned?
Well, frankly, there rarely is a dedicated set of resources to focus on the family side. The risk profile that I focus on initially is really trying to understand where is the family as it relates to three primary areas. One, having really effective communication. How strong are they? Are they talking to each other? Your example. Oftentimes, people can't have conversations about very basic things. And at a certain level, the biggest part of a family's wealth is jointly owned in some kind of vehicle, whether that be an operating business or a family office, a trust, what have you. So the communication element is really important. If you can't talk to people who are your co-owners, you're putting those assets at risk over the long term. The second challenge that families have, or second category, I'll say, is of how to really manage conflict, how to manage differences and keep those differences from becoming conflict. And when they do become conflict, how are we going to resolve that in a way, again, that does not put our relationships and our financial assets at risk? And then the third sort of broad category that I see, I would call falling into the area of navigating change, generational transitions. I had a conversation with someone at the gym as I was working out just this morning who is a non-family executive in a very, very substantial local family business. And they're having a really tough time because the family has not put as much thought into managing that transition. What does that require? Is it management and ownership? We tend to conflate those when it comes to family businesses. So the risk profile is really looking at how is the family doing in those three areas, and then thinking about what would help the family to move forward. And then we look at what kind of financial investment might be needed to support that.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, these are all, when I have these conversations, these are the three biggest issues that always come up, and it always starts with communication.
Yep.
And unfortunately, there's no easy answers. I think part of the reason people don't address these is because it requires a huge amount of time. You can't just throw money at these problems or bring in the best expert within the subject matter of communication if people aren't actively participating in the exercises or putting the work in. It's really irrelevant, right?
It is not a great use of resources if the family itself is not going to invest the time. I practiced law for almost 20 years before doing this work. And in my legal days, people would come in and give me a problem and go off about their merry way. And it was up to me to make the argument to the judge. It was up to me to convince the jury. And they were just kind of there. Exact opposite in this work. Family members need to figure out how to have these conversations amongst themselves. And simply bringing in experts, people often do that, bring in consultants like myself, frankly, as a way of trying to help manage the tensions within the family and hoping that I, for example, am going to have a conversation with the mom or with the brother. And I say to people all the time, do you really want to have to pay someone to have a conversation or to convey a message to a family member? I don't think that's really what you want. What I find is most people don't know how to do this. And therefore, frankly, they simply avoid it. Dealing with anything having to do with people issues, relationships, makes us as human beings very uncomfortable because we can't control what the other person is doing. We don't know what they might say if I say, Mom, Dad, I love the family business. I'm very proud to be a part of this family. I really don't want to work in the family business. So you have those kinds of challenges. What I find happens is I use the iceberg analogy a lot. So if we think about the challenge of communication, that is a surface issue. Bringing in and someone like myself who's only going to try to teach people better listening skills or how to better articulate yourself is not addressing the emotional undercurrents, that part that we cannot see. And that is one of the, I think, biggest risks, one of the reasons that families aren't as successful when they bring in consultants to talk about communication is because they're just working at the surface level. Let's kind of get to the root to understand, why is it so challenging to have these conversations? What can we do? I call it, frankly, really surfacing and making explicit some of the implicit and addressing the elephants in the room. Helping families figure out how do we have those kinds of conversations. And candidly, many people don't feel safe in their own families talking about these issues on their own because we're not trained to do this naturally.
Right. To echo what you were saying earlier, my experience has been when our families brought in a third-party consultant, that first layer of interaction is that consultant acting as a proxy or as a projection to backdoor conversations that people don't want to have directly with one another because they don't have a culture of transparency or effective mm-hmm. communication skills.
Exactly. And the question that I ask is that really serving the family? So I think about working with families as leadership development and capacity building. That is what I see my job as, not to serve as a messenger. And frankly, it is uncomfortable. There are no way to get around it. The challenge is, what are the skill sets that we can develop to help us do that in a way that we haven't been able to do before? So again, families tend to bring in consultants to act as messengers, create what are known as triangles. I'm having a difficult time, rather, as a next generation talking to my parents about something. My parents are also nervous about that. That's my latest client. Parents want to have a conversation with their daughter about their estate planning. You would think that the parents could simply sit down over dinner or coffee and have a conversation with their child about the estate planning. No, what they have done, the parents have enlisted the trust and estates attorney, both their internal, their in-house accountant, and an outside accountant. And this poor young woman is just intimidated as heck. She doesn't know what to do, so she calls me because she wants someone, quote, on her side. So we have these series of what are referred to as interlocking triangles. You and I, brother, sister, can't have a conversation, so I go and talk to our sister. You go and talk to our mom. Now we've got two triangles, and everybody's focused on all of this basically external stuff. And nothing is happening that will help you and me get to a place of having a better conversation. Everybody may feel a little bit better at the moment because I can, you know, rant to my sister about how terrible you are. You rant to our mom about how terrible I am. But nobody is trying to figure out, how do we get to a better place between you and me? That's the real issue.
I think you nailed it. In my experience, these triangles in my nuclear family, biologically, it's the prosecutor, the victim, and the witness, right? The classic setup where we all assign each other these roles or assume those roles. And it's very hard to break out of that cycle when somebody initiates that way. So how do you break that dynamic down? If you're listening to this and you're saying, oh my God, this like describes every conversation I have around a hard topic with my family, what do you do?
I encourage people to think about what I refer to as the ABCs and patterns of reactivity, which is getting to try to understand, why are we having so much difficulty? One of the challenges is, particularly when it comes to families, we tend to pathologize our inability to work together. In a business that is not family owned, if somebody's having some kind of communication challenge, what you would probably do is create some sort of personal development plan for that person and get them a coach and keep on about your merry way. When it comes to families, we tend to pathologize and say, oh, this family's dysfunctional. Something is wrong with them. So the first thing that I try to do is to help people appreciate there's nothing wrong with you or your family. We are all acting instinctively. It's how we're hardwired biologically to protect ourselves. Back in the day, we were fearful of lions, tigers, and bears. For most of us, our physical safety is not a concern these days. It's the emotional tension, the emotional reactivity of being afraid, rather, of what's going to happen in various contexts. And what I like to do is encourage people to think about what might be underlying that. And that is where the ABCs of reactivity come into play. Those are really, it's an acronym for some unmet need. The A is for approval. You might think of it as appreciation or acknowledgement, but you get the gist of the category of unmet need that somebody may be feeling. The B is for belonging. There are lots of people, frankly, who don't feel terribly at home in their own families, whether it be because of political reasons, it might have something to do with the difference in levels of wealth, all kinds of reasons that people don't feel as though they belong in their own family. There are two C's in the acronym. The first C is certainty, which goes back to the old VUCA. Our brains are, we want to know what's gonna happen. When GPS first came out, I would literally print out the map, even though I have it on my phone, because I need to see it. I want, what if the phone goes down? What, you know, there's no cell tower. That's certain. We want to be able to control things because that gives us a sense of safety. And the second C is control. One of our biggest challenges, I think, as human beings is just to love people for who they are. We get so locked into, I think my sister needs to do this, or you should do that. We don't want anybody telling us what we should do. So why are we trying to tell everybody else how they live their lives? Because it's control. We want to know what's going to happen. Again, that certainty, that control gives us a sense of safety. And then the S is for security. That might be financial security. Oftentimes, even in very wealthy families, there's a lot of anxiety around money because somebody may be controlling the money and people don't know what the implications are for them. Then there may be some kind of emotional insecurity, emotional safety. There are all kinds of ways that people think about and are challenged around feeling a sense of security within their families. And those underlying issues are really below the waterline, the things that we can't see, touch, and feel. And because we're biologically wired to protect ourselves, we have four different patterns of how we generally react when one of those needs is not being met. One of them is triangle, which I mentioned earlier. I don't know what is going on here. There's a conversation I know we need to have, but I don't know how to have it. So I'm going to go over here and talk to somebody else and spread this anxiety around. Second one is referred to as over and under functioning. Classic example of that is the helicopter parent. Child can't develop into their fullness of who they are because the parents are always stepping in. The parents are over-functioning, and it teaches children to under-function. I've seen that in my own family. My sister-in-law, frankly, she has those tendencies. It was so interesting. My nephew was younger. She'd want to cut his meat for him. No, mom, I can do it. I can do it. No, you're just learning. Let me do it for you. And after a period of time, he would just sit back and let her do it. So he never gets the opportunity to exercise that muscle. That happens in families all the time. Third area where this anxiety shows up, the reactivity when there is some unmet need, is conflict. For some people, frankly, arguing back and forth is the only way they know how to be in relationship. It's something that they've learned as a coping mechanism. Again, there's not dysfunction here. People are coping the best way they've learned how. The challenge is that some of us have learned things that others of us haven't. And then the last of the four patterns is distance. It might be physical distance, where people literally will move across the country, move to a different country to, quote, get away from my family, but are still energetically tied to them. Or it could be two people sitting in the same room, sleeping in the same bed every night, but there is that emotional distance because they're not able to articulate what these unmet needs are and figure out how to work through them.
Exceptional family offices, family enterprises, wealth management, and financial services organizations require superior leadership to successfully thrive in today's competitive environment. This is why I'd like to introduce you to our new sponsor, Mac International. Mac International is recognized as the premier boutique firm that specializes in providing retained executive search and strategic human capital consulting solutions to single and multi-client family offices, family enterprises, and the full spectrum of wealth management advisory, investment management, and financial services firms that serve ultra-high net private investors and family offices on a national and international basis. If you're interested in learning more about Mac International, visit their website at macinternational.com. There's so much to unpack, but where I would start, and I'm curious, is it seems like this needs to be, in order to break down some of these barriers and dynamics, the culture of the family needs to start from the top. And also not only from the top, from a leadership perspective, but from a governance perspective in terms of how things are structured, what their norms are, what the value of the family is, what the values of the families are, but also from the willingness of the matriarch, patriarch of family kind of leadership to do self-work before they can have these type of conversations effectively. Would you agree with that?
I agree that it's extremely helpful if you have that kind of leadership from the top. Candidly, often that's not there. Again, it's our human tendency. You know, I've literally had people say to me, Thomasina, if you could just get my young people in order, go work with them. It's the kids who are 30, 40, 50 year olds. Go work with them, get them straight. I'm good. And then you go and have the conversation with the so-called kids who are adults and have their own families. And they will say something along the lines of, well, Thomasina, if you could just get my parents to just back up and give me a little space, I can show them what I can do. I can run this business. I can manage this foundation. So everyone is pointing fingers at the other person. Again, it's the classic, everybody else change while I stay the same. Because families are actually emotional systems, we are constantly reacting to each other. The reality is that I can change my own behavior, which is going to lead to some kind of change in the relationship, even if my mother still wants to be controlling, or even if my sister is still difficult to deal with. The reality is, if we had to wait for someone else to change, we'd be waiting several lifetimes in many cases. So part of the challenge is helping families understand how they're co-creating what is going on. It's not just that mom does this. One of the things that I help families do is use a tool called the family diagram, which is a sophisticated family tree. It's a way to physically map out what are the reactions when somebody can't have a conversation. When there's some tension or some upset in the family, how do people react? And the reality is that these are patterns that people have learned over time and that repeat actually from generation to generation. So helping people to understand that you are a part of a system, one part of that system changes, the system itself will change. In some cases, it may just be minor ripples across the pond. In other cases, it may seem like a tidal wave. And because these are learned behaviors over, in many cases, generations, as well as decades, it can take time for this kind of thing to happen. But the key is to help people to figure out, how can I be the change that I want to see in my own family?
I think it's really helpful to try to get to that why question that you keep asking. It's not necessarily the realization that there's a problem is helpful. And I think it's worthwhile to understand, but it's really what got us here and why do these dynamics occur? Mm-hmm. Until you can get to that root causation, I think everything else is just kind of window dressing and kicking the can down the road, because you'll just keep falling into these same patterns and relationship dynamics that you've created over the generations, right?
Exactly. I use the analogy of a dam. If there's a leak in a dam, if there's too much pressure and something bursts through the dam, you can go and block that up for a while and patch it up and make it look great. But if the pressure is not relieved, it's just going to pop out someplace else. Or maybe it'll pop out there, but even larger than it was the first time. And so the challenge is really to try to understand, what are the unmet needs here? And how can we address those? And understanding also that a lot of times what's going on, we take it as personal, but it's not personal. It's not about us. I had a conversation with a young woman just the other night, last night, actually, about this. She had a conversation with her dad, and she took it, what he said, as an affront to her. It had nothing to do with her. It was really about him. But because she was feeling her own pain, she really couldn't see that. You know, one of the challenges, is the biggest problem in a lot of families is people don't feel like anybody's listening to them. That's the root of the communication. I'm concerned about my pain and what I feel. And that can, in many cases, blind me to what other people are feeling as well. And to recognize that we're all going through something here, and it's not a personal thing. Sometimes people think that, you know, you walk down the hall in your office and you don't speak to somebody one morning. Oh, you know, Brian's mad at me. What happened? You may just be thinking about a conversation you just had or a conversation you're about to go have and not even have seen the person. But yet they've made up a story in their head. So unpacking our stories is a big part of this as well, because we have the conversation in our heads. We're not having the conversation with the people that we need to have the conversation with.
What is it? My therapist tells me sometimes that my happiness is just the one conversation I don't want to have away.
Yeah. Because you don't know what that other person is going to say. Are they going to be receptive? Are they going to reject what you have to say? Are they going to downplay it? And sometimes people don't respond, not because they don't care about you, because they didn't hear it, because they don't know what to say. It's like they don't know what to do with that. I had a conversation with a mom and daughter like that at a family meeting just a couple of weeks ago. The daughter poured out her heart. Well, it was interesting. The daughter leaves the room during a break. I come back. I'm like, where did she go? She said she was going to get something to eat, but she was upset by something that her mom was saying on a cell phone conversation. She comes back she tells me what's going on by text on the phone, but doesn't want to talk to her mother. She tells me, hoping I'm going to tell her mother. This is the triangle, right? That's supposedly my job. Well, actually, no, that's not my job. My job is to help you figure out, help you get comfortable sharing with your mother. So when she came back in the room, I was actually texting her, asking her before she walked in the room, but she walked in before I finished the text. Would you mind sharing with your mom why you left the room? She kind of looked at me, and then she looked at her mom. And this is a woman who's almost 50 years old. And then she said, well, okay. And she started to talk, and it unraveled this beautiful conversation that they never would have had. The mom's immediate response was not to acknowledge a single word that the young lady had said. The mom started talking about something else, defending what she had done and why she did it. She didn't understand the impact on her daughter. So we had a conversation that opened up that space. And that's the value of having a third party.
Yeah, it's huge. So if you're listening to this and you recognize that you've got challenges and issues here, like what's best practice? You know, I think bringing a third party consultant, obviously great, but we covered that it's not a panacea. Maybe like, where do you start? What does great look like for families that really nail this and right the ship? What are some specifics? Aren't super helpful because every situation is obviously a little bit different, but generally, directionally, what are best practices here in this space?
I shy away from the term best practices because what might be best for one family and even one situation in the same family may not necessarily be the best thing to do in the next situation. So what I encourage people to do is simply start by thinking about ways that you can just increase your own awareness of what's happening. What am I doing? How am I reacting when I get triggered? When am I triggered? What am I triggered by? What is going on? Who is doing the triggering? How do I respond? Just to observe yourself and people around you, and then to have a willingness. It does take a willingness to examine oneself, to be reflective. Is that really how I want to show up in the world? I don't want to be snapping at my sister. I don't want to be arguing with my dad. Having that awareness, being reflective about what your personal role is in the situation and not just always pointing fingers at the other person, not to dismiss or approve what they're doing, but to recognize that you're part of it. If you're part of the challenge and you can be part of the solution. And how can I get into a better place? What would make me more comfortable having these conversations with my family? What do I need to do to work on myself? And there are a number of things that people can do. I mean, with the internet these days, or you can just go ask ChatGPT. Part of it is increasing our own emotional intelligence. But another huge piece that gets missed is understanding the system dynamics and looking out for these patterns. When I argue with my sister, what does she do? Who do I turn to when I don't want to talk to her? That's a triangle I'm creating there. How can I figure out how to get support when I'm feeling anxious and needing support, but still stay in relationship with my sister? What are the resources that help me to do that? And that varies for people. Sometimes, honestly, it's just as simple as taking a pause. If I have a hair trigger temper, can I train myself? If I've observed myself long enough, I know when I'm about to go there. I know what's going to trigger me. Then I can catch myself before I go off. Or if I go off, learning how to bring myself back. Do I need to excuse myself from the room? Just take a sip of water to give myself an opportunity to breathe. Meditation, some people really, really help, is helpful for them. If you're a person of faith, maybe you pray before you go in there. Some people love music. It can be calming. I have a client who uses the first word of a prayer, a song. The prayer she really likes is the prayer of St. Francis Assisi. So she simply says the first line. She doesn't even need to say the whole prayer. And it's enough to calm her down. We all have to experiment and be willing to recognize that there are things we can do for ourselves and then go on an exploration, make ourselves a project, and figure out what can I do to help me not go there, or if I go there, not stay in a state that would lead to a downward spiral.
Yeah, the downward spiral. I'm listening to a book called The Upward Spiral right now.
Ah.
So I think that's a great place to kind of end this conversation that we could continue on for a long time. One thing I do want to ask about, I know we started to talk about International Women's Day. You have a new program oriented towards women entrepreneurs or family members, business owners, etc. Would love to learn more about that.
Yes. You don't have to be an owner. It's for any woman who is a part of the family enterprise ecosystem, meaning you're a member of the family, then you're more than welcome to participate. And part of it is to talk about the kinds of things we're talking about now in real life as things are unfolding for people and helping them figure out how to use some of these strategies, how to use some of these frameworks that most people simply haven't been exposed to. The group is called The Few Family Enterprise Women. And people can find information about that on my website, which is developfamilyleaders.com. Developfamilyleaders.com.
Yeah, it's terrific and much needed. So kudos to you for putting that in.
Thank you.
So we already kind of know how people can get in touch. Thomasine, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. For our listeners, please leave us a review and a rating. Let us know your favorite part of the conversation. A question we ask people that come on the show, do you have a daily practice that helps bring peace to your life?
I do. I have a spiritual practice that entails a daily message and then a set of affirmations that I use to help ground me before I start the day and that I can reflect on throughout the day whenever things start to get a little tense.
When they get intense, it's every day, I feel like.
Yes.
So good for
yes.
you. Well, thank you again for joining us. Best of luck with the new program. I look forward to staying in touch and keep doing this work out there. It's much needed.
Thank you so much for having me, Brian.
It's great. Take care.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.